ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, entitled Divinity and Divine Service, text number 25. Bhejire munayo athagre Bhagavantam adhokshajam Sattvam vishuddham shemaya Kalpante ye anutan iha Munaya, the sages. Atha, thus. Agre, previously. Bhagavantam, unto the personality of Godhead. Adhoksajam, the transcendence. Sattvam, existence. Vishuddham, above the three modes of nature. Shemaya, to derive the ultimate benefit. Kalpante, deserve. Ye, those. Anu, follow. Tan, those. Iha, in this material world. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Previously, all the great sages rendered service unto the personality of Godhead due to his existence above the three modes of material nature. They worshipped him to become free from material conditions and thus derive the ultimate benefit. Whoever follows such great authorities is also eligible for liberation from the material world. Purport. The purpose of performing religion is neither to profit by material gain, nor to get the simple knowledge of discerning matter from spirit. The ultimate aim of religious performances is to relieve oneself from material bondage and regain the life of freedom in the transcendental world, where the personality of Godhead is the supreme person. Laws of religion, therefore, are directly enacted by the personality of Godhead. And except for the Mahajans or the authorized agents of the Lord, no one knows the purpose of religion. There are 12 particular agents of the Lord who know the purpose of religion, and all of them render transcendental service unto Him. Persons who desire their own good may follow these Mahajans and thus attain the supreme benefit. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshur Unmalitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So somehow I'm here. I'm not supposed to be on the Vyasasan. So please bear with me. So in this second chapter, text 25, which is more or less a continuation of the previous two texts, it's mentioned that, and it's also quite similar to text number 22. So it's mentioned that all great sages rendered service unto the personality of Godhead. So, we see that devotional service is being rendered from time immemorial. Lord Brahma was spoken in the heart, he was enlightened in the heart by Lord Krishna or by Lord Vishnu. And he was asked to perform penance, and then the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken to him as the Chaturshloki, and he further expanded it. Like that. So it's been coming down like that. And so from time immemorial, devotional service has been performed by all great personalities. So, but as time is progressing by the influence of time, that devotional service either was lost or became materially motivated. So here it's mentioned that all great sages rendered service unto the personality of Godhead. So as from Bhagavad Gita 10th chapter we understand, they are the seven great sages and the other four great sages. So those four great sages are, do you know, Sanatan, Sanandan and Sanat Kumar. Does anyone know the names of the seven great sages? Atri, Marichi, Gautama, Surya Gopal Prabhu, you know? Gautama. So there are seven great sages. So when Lord Brahma wanted to procreate, further populate the universe, so therefore these sages were put into action. So, but they all were actually rendering service unto the personality of Godhead, and specifically to the Bhagavan aspect of the personality of Godhead. So as we heard in this chapter, there's three levels of self-realization, or there's three understandings of the Absolute Truth. So there's Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. So this one aspect of the Absolute Truth is that he's the Brahma Jyoti effulgence coming from the body of the Lord. So that is compared to the sun's rays. And then there's the Paramatma aspect of the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. And then finally there's the Bhagavan aspect, in whom the other two aspects are contained. So all the great sages have been rendering devotional service to the Bhagavan aspect of the personality of Godhead. So Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdate. So Krishna is actually the Bhagavan aspect of the Lord. And Krishna is situated above the existence of the three modes of material nature. So Krishna expands as his integrated portions and also as his separated parts and parcels. So Krishna has two kinds of expansions. His Vishnu Tattva and his Jiva Tattvas. So both are actually expansions of the Lord. So in the Vishnu Tattva, they have all the potencies and qualities of the Lord, but they are manifest to different degrees according to the particular time, place and circumstance. So in the next chapter coming up, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. There's a list of various incarnations of the Lord. And as we'll read those verses, we'll see that how those incarnations descend to fulfill particular missions. So like Lord Buddha came to establish, basically to establish morality and get people to give up non-violence. And then the Boar incarnation came to lift the earth from the nether regions of the universe. And then Lord Ram came to exhibit his pastimes and to kill Ravana, to establish again Krishna consciousness. So all these different incarnations of the Lord execute certain functions. But when Lord Krishna comes, he exhibits all the potencies of Godhead. So Krishna is the original source of all other incarnations. Krishna is the avatari and others are the avatars. So Krishna is like that original candle and the others are that expansion from that candle. But they have the same potency. And the example is given of the moon. So when, you know, we have the full moon. Once in a fortnight we have the full moon. When then the moon wanes or it waxes. So that doesn't mean that the moon is actually limited. The moon still has the same potencies, but it is exhibiting different amounts of light. So Krishna has the same, Krishna is all powerful. And Krishna is above the three modes of material nature. That's why the word used here is adokshajam, the transcendent. So the Lord Krishna cannot be perceived by our material senses. So adokshajam, which means that he's beyond the direct perception of the three of the material senses. So therefore to understand Krishna, we cannot understand by our material endeavors or by mental speculation. Krishna can only be understood by the process of devotional service. As he says, Bhaktya Mama Vijanati Yavan Yasrasri Tatpata. I can only be understood by the process of devotional service. So Krishna cannot be understood by any material means. And So these days we see, or from quite a while ago, originally, as I said before, that everyone was worshipping the Bhagavan aspect of the Lord, and by the influence of time, things got contaminated. So, as we know, there are the four yugas. So Satya Yuga is quite pure. And then 25% irreligion comes in Treta Yuga. And then Dwapara Yuga is 50-50. And Kali Yuga is 25%. And that also is diminishing very rapidly. So it's practically nil, even 5,000 years later. So back then, everyone was, the sages, the great sages, they were all rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. And they worshipped Him to become free from material conditions. So as with the progress of time, basically religion became motivated. Especially as we can see in today's day and age. People perform, first of all, nobody is into religion. In today's day and age, in today's society, a religion is practically extinct, especially in the Western world. But still, there are some churches, mosques, temples all over the world, and some people go to them. And of course, they are in minority. But the reason they go to the church or the temple is actually for a material motivation. So we have. The reason we come to the material world is because we want to enjoy separately from Krishna. We want to lord it over material nature. So, therefore there is this competition to gratify the senses. So then man takes to religion so that they can, if they can actually have sense gratification. Therefore even in the Vedas we see there is dharma, artha, kama and moksha. There is this incentive given for sense gratification by performance of religious activities, even in the Vedas. So one might ask why even in the Vedic literature such kind of incentive is given, though it is actually not good for the living entity. Though the real self-interest of the living entity is to render devotional service unto Krishna, but why are such incentives given? So the whole idea is actually to gradually uplift the living entity, to gradually bring the living entity to understand that his real self-interest is to render service to Krishna. So we see that when man is materially motivated, therefore they take up to religion. So so people go to church to pray for the daily bread. So if they don't get the daily bread, if they get it through economic development or other means, then as we see in today's world, that therefore religion is not very popular. Because man can become economically prosperous without taking to religion. And in fact, religion is kind of looked down on because there are so many rules and regulations. In today's society, no one wants to be bound by rules and regulations. As it's mentioned here, they worship Him to become free from material conditions and thus derive ultimate benefit. So the whole idea to take up to spiritual life is to become free from material conditions. So if we study the Vedic literature, we actually understand that we are bound by material conditions. So we are actually not free. So people have this illusion, they think that they are actually free. So especially in the Western countries, like Australia is a lucky country, people think they are free. You know, they don't have to conform to any kinds of rules and regulations. They can live their life in any way they want. So they can get up any time they want to. In other words, they can live their personal life without anyone telling them how to live. So they are the masters of their own destiny. They choose how to live. But in reality, we see everyone is bound by conditions. There's no one who is free from conditions. So, of course, we have these basic conditions. There's birth, there's death, there's old age, there's disease. And there's the threefold miseries. But even still, people like to think they're free, but they're actually bound by economic conditions. They're bound by social conditions. They're bound by political conditions. Everyone is bound by certain conditions. No one is free. Therefore, these material conditions actually, because we are bound by conditions, we cannot experience real happiness. Because our happiness is based on material conditions. You know, if the weather is good, therefore I'll be able to enjoy, if it is good weather. So this is being bound by material conditions. Or I can only enjoy if I have a certain amount of salary. So this is being bound by a material condition. Or I can only enjoy if I have children. Some people, if they don't have children, they are miserable. So they are bound by a material condition. Or I can only enjoy if it is such and such a condition. So we are looking for unalloyed love in a world which is full of material conditions. But here, as is mentioned, the great sages, they worship him to become free from material conditions and thus derive the ultimate benefit. So we see that devotional service is performed without any motivation to become free from material conditions and then to experience unalloyed happiness and bliss. So as I was mentioning that in Satyayuga things are very pure, but by the influence of time degrades everything. Therefore, the real religious principles became lost. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he again re-established him. And therefore, as is mentioned here in the purport, the purpose of performing religion is neither to profit by material gain, nor to get the simple knowledge of discerning matter from spirit. So in today's society, we can see that first of all, religion is not at all popular. And even if people perform it, it is for material gain. But that's not the real purpose of religion. As it's mentioned in the sixth verse of this chapter, that the real purpose of religion is actually to understand one's relationship with Krishna and to revive that relationship and to act in that capacity. That is the whole idea behind religion. And also, the purpose of religion is not to discern matter from spirit. So even in today's society, even this very preliminary understanding is also missing. This very basic understanding is of, and we see Srila Prabhupada in many of his lectures or conversations, he is actually stressing this very basic point that we are not the body, we are the spirit soul. So even this very basic understanding is lacking in today's society. And people are in so much ignorance because they don't even know what the self is. So what to speak of understanding what real religion is, if they can't even understand what the self is? Because if they think the self is the body, and therefore even if they perform some religious activities, it is ultimately based for the body. So because there's this lack of understanding what the real self is. So we see in Prabhupada's conversations and lectures, he's stressing this point again and again. You're not the body, you're the spirit soul. And even to get this across to people is not very easy, because people are so dull-minded and so covered over that so much energy is required just to explain this very basic understanding, basic truth that we are actually the spirit soul, not the body. But real religion is actually further than that. So it's not only understanding who we are, but to also act in that capacity. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam we see that all kinds of cheating processes are kicked out right in the beginning. So in the very second verse, Dharma Projita Kaitavo Atra Paramo Nirmat Saranam. So that Srimad Bhagavatam actually kicks out all kinds of cheating religions. So a cheating religion is one which is motivated by a desire for personal enjoyment. So all kinds of bogus philosophies, all kinds of cheating religions are rejected right in the beginning. And Srimad Bhagavatam actually propounds the real religious principle, which is loving devotional service to the personality of Godhead. So in Bhagavad Gita we see different paths are described by Krishna. Krishna talks on different levels. Krishna talks about our material duties, karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, and Krishna also describes bhakti yoga. But at the end, Krishna says, you surrender unto me. That is real religion. And Srimad Bhagavatam takes that further and expands on that. So I'll just read the purport again. The ultimate aim of religious performances is to release oneself from material bondage and regain the life of freedom in the transcendental world where the personality of Godhead is the supreme person. Laws of religion, therefore, are directly enacted by the personality of Godhead. And except for the Mahajans or the authorized agents of the Lord, no one knows the purpose of religion. There are 12 particular agents of the Lord who know the purpose of religion, and all of them render transcendental service unto Him. Persons who desire their own good may follow these Mahajans and thus attain the supreme benefit. So laws of religion are directly enacted by the personality of Godhead. So as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, worship is also in three modes. And as we have been hearing in the previous two texts, how Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva accept the three qualities of material nature. So Brahma accepting the mode of passion, Lord Vishnu accepting the mode of goodness, and Lord Shiva the mode of ignorance. And Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that worship is also according to one's faith in the three modes of nature. So those in the mode of goodness worship the demigods, like Indra, Vayu, Chandra or whoever. And those in the modes of passion, they worship the demons. So demons, meaning they create, they manufacture their own god. So we see this is very prevalent today. There are so many so-called, in India they're called godmen. In other words, you know, self-created godmen. There are plenty of them. One just died recently. So I don't know how God died, but God is supposed to be Aja, unborn and eternal, but somehow God died and didn't look very handsome also. Didn't look very beautiful. So many gods are actually created, and they're factories of God. Of godmen. They're actually producing God. So in the mode of passion, people produce their own, they produce a God. Okay, this person is God because he can exhibit certain kind of vibhutis or certain kinds of tricks, therefore we accept him or her to be God. And then in the mode of ignorance, people actually worship ghosts and spirits. So all this tantric worship kind of thing, this is in the mode of ignorance. So according to one's faith, one will worship in a certain mode of nature. But worshipping Krishna is actually transcendental. So even no matter whichever mode of nature we are situated in, if we worship the Lord, we can actually be elevated. So this is that verse, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udharadi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. So, whether one is full of material desires or without material desires or seeking liberation, if one worships, one can worship Krishna. One should worship Krishna. So no matter which mode of nature we are situated in, if we worship Vishnu or Krishna, one actually will be elevated. Whereas if one worships these personalities in these different modes of nature, one's consciousness cannot be elevated. It will only be elevated if we worship Supreme Lord. So we see even very practically, before taking up to spiritual life, most probably we were in the mode of ignorance. At least I was, maybe still am. But by worshipping Radha Ballabha, we can practically see that how we are uplifted from the lower modes of nature. And gradually we come to the mode of goodness. And the whole idea is even to transcend the mode of goodness and come to the platform of Vishuddha Sattva. So we see, like now Govardhan Puja is about to come at the end of October. So the residents of Vrindavan, it was a custom or a tradition to perform Indra Puja for economic prosperity. So and Krishna, he was, because all benefit can be derived by performing devotional service, Krishna thought, why in Vrindavan, where pure devotional service should be performed, why are they performing Indra Puja? So Krishna decided to ask Nanda Maharaj, you know, what's going on? So he asked his father, my dear father, you know, what are you doing? What activities are you performing? What kind of worship are you doing? What's the intention behind it? What's the idea behind it? What benefit will you get? How are you going to perform it? What's the entire procedure? And Krishna was very small, like a child. And then when he asked Nanda Maharaj these questions, he thought to himself, he thought he's just a child. He won't be able to understand the intricacies of yajna and the purpose behind it. So he was silent. He didn't say anything. And then Krishna probed him further. He said, a saintly person is liberal to everyone, to his friends, enemies, and those who are neutral. So therefore he does not keep any secrets. He gives them out. And he says, furthermore, you are actually, especially one does not hide any secrets from one's family members, intimate family members. So then, after saying that, Maharaj Nanda, he actually described to him why he was performing Indra Puja. He said that the reason he's performing Indra Puja is because Lord Indra controls, he's the demigod of rain. He controls rain. So we need rain to produce grains or for agriculture. So without agriculture we cannot survive. Therefore we need rain. So in today we can see that people are in so much ignorance that they do not even recognize that there are actually demigods who control different aspects of material nature. And because our survival is based on these living entities. So in today's day and world, there is no yajna being performed. Therefore, there is scarcity everywhere. There is so much scarcity. So when he performed, Maharaj Nanda said that it's a bit hard with children crying. So he said, yeah, I'm performing these yajnas to please Indra so we can get rain for material prosperity. And Krishna's purpose to divert the yajna to Govardhan Hill was twofold. So the Lord wanted to divert because one cannot get any in other words, all material desires lost my train of thought. Sorry? Govardhan Puja. So why Krishna Yeah, he was speaking to Nanda Maharaj. So he was speaking to Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj said that we can. I just lost my train of thoughts. So yeah, Krishna's purpose of Lord Nanda Maharaj's purpose of performing Indra Puja was to basically get rains. And Krishna wanted him to divert the Indra Puja to himself, so because he knew that he didn't want the residents of Vrindavan to be worshipping demigods. Because the whole idea is that everyone worships the Supreme Lord rather than demigods. And in fact, all kinds of benedictions are given by the Supreme Lord. The demigods cannot really give any benedictions. Those benedictions have to be sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. And to gain all those kinds of and one worships demigods if someone wants material desires to be fulfilled. So Krishna wanted, of course this is, the residents of Vrindavan are pure devotees by nature. But this is actually a leela the purpose was to chastise Indra also because his devotee got puffed up. So Indra was thinking that he is the supreme controller. And so Krishna wanted to also teach him a lesson and also to set an example for others that we don't need to approach the demigods to fulfill our material desires. And in fact, those material desires are sanctioned by Krishna, which the demigods fulfill. And even in fact, that Krishna strengthens one's faith to worship a certain kind of demigod. So even if the reason people take to demigod worship, if they do take in this day and age, is basically to fulfill their material desires very quickly. But even to have strong faith in a particular kind of demigod, that faith has to be strengthened by Krishna sitting as a super soul within the heart. So Krishna actually gives that faith. So even to have faith in any kind of thing, that faith has to be given by the Lord. And why does Krishna give that? Because Krishna does not want to interfere in our independence. So if Krishna doesn't bestow that faith, then Krishna is actually interfering in our minute independence. So Krishna wants voluntary love and voluntary surrender. Krishna does not want to interfere. So if we have any material desires, Krishna facilitates them so we can be independent. And so the whole idea of the material nature smashing us is to basically bring us to our senses that we cannot actually satisfy our material desires independently. Material desires cannot really fulfill us. And our real happiness is in our relationship with Krishna. And as is mentioned here, that the laws of religion are actually enacted by the personality of Godhead. No one can manufacture any laws of religion. So religion is enacted by Krishna because Krishna knows the purpose of religion. So who else can set the laws of religion? Because Krishna himself knows. So in today's world, man-made religions are very popular. People say, I have my own religion, or I'll read from these different books and I'll make my own religion. I just take what I like. So that is very, very prevalent. Or we live the way we want to. There's Scientology. There's so many kinds of man-made religions. But the whole idea is again sense gratification. And even to understand the path given by Krishna, one has to follow the path of the Mahajanas. So as it's mentioned in the 6th canto, 3rd chapter, I think, verse 20, there are 12 Mahajans. Who knows the names? There's Brahma. One by one. Brahma, Janat, Yamraj, Bhishma, Bali, who else? Pralad, Shukdev Goswami, Yamraj, that's done. Shiva, yes. The four Kumaras. So that's, I think we are there. 12. Kapila, yes. Yeah, Kapila is there. Manu. So there are 12 Mahajans who actually know the purpose behind religion. So even to understand the purpose behind religion, we actually have to approach the devotees of the Lord. So there are the four sampradayas. There's the Brahma sampradaya, Lakshmi sampradaya, Rudra sampradaya, and the Kumara sampradaya. So these 12 Mahajans fit in these four sampradayas. So to understand the purpose behind religion, or to understand the laws of religion, one has to be following in the footsteps of one of these 12 devotees in the four sampradayas. So to be independent of these 12 Mahajans and to think that we can understand what the Vedas are, that is simply a waste of time. So we can see we are in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya. So our sampradaya is coming from Lord Brahma. And there's also Shukdev Goswami, the Mahajan, in the dynastic succession. So, to understand the purpose of religion, we have to approach the devotees. So, I'll just read further. Persons who desire their own good may follow these Mahajans and thus attain the supreme benefit. Stop here. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
So as a comment, you know, in extension to your point, you know, about the bodily concept of life, I was just reminded of a conversation between Srila Prabhupada and Ambarish Prabhu in the early 1970s. So Prabhupada is saying, so what you think of body, something producing, it's like a machine, you know? Then Prabhupada corrects him, no, it's not a machine, it is a machine, you know? Then Ambrish Prabhu says, it's like a growing machine, you know? Prabhupada says, it grows for some time, but it's a changing machine, you know, mostly changes.
Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada was very emphatic. When people would say it is growing, Prabhupada said no, it is changing. Yeah. And yes, Prabhu.
Can you say Hare Krishna is one of the another religion?
Religion is only one. Prabhupada, I was hearing on lecture, Prabhupada was saying, you know, gold is gold. Whether Hindu gold or Christian gold or Muslim gold, gold is gold. So, you know, religion is only one. Religion means to develop love for God. That is religion. So any path which helps us develop love for God or Krishna, that is real religion. That's the test of religion. To the degree we are developing our loving propensity to serve the Lord. Yes. Or anything.
So contradictory to that, devotees try to preach and they cut, they try to cut and they use the lives of the common man. So how can we justify the preaching process which we are in? Is it not against what the master is doing?
Okay. Well, we have to understand what Paramatma really wants. So, the reason Paramatma is there in the heart, so Paramatma has two manifestations. One is, Supreme Lord has one manifestation as the Chaitya Guru. He is situated in the heart as the Paramatma. Then he has his external manifestation as the spiritual master. So the reason Krishna accompanies the Jiva as the Paramatma is actually to bring the Jiva back to Godhead, eventually. But at the same time, the Paramatma is sitting as a witness in the heart, and it will facilitate all kinds of desires because it doesn't want to, come. Krishna wants unalloyed love, voluntary love. So the Paramatma is waiting for that time when the living entity is frustrated of its material desires, and those material desires have to be fulfilled by the Paramatma. So the Paramatma is waiting for that point when we are frustrated, then it will guide the Jiva. So internally and externally. So the reason Paramatma is sitting in the heart is actually to take the Jiva back to Godhead. And if we are interested, then the Paramatma will give guidance. And when we preach, we are actually trying to fulfill the purpose of Paramatma. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
Mahatattva.
Okay. So, Mahatattva. It's a pretty random question. Okay. So we have this spiritual sky. From Krishna's body comes these bodily rays. And these bodily rays are situated in the Paravyoma, or the spiritual sky. So in the one corner of the spiritual sky, Mahatattva is like this unmanifest material energy. Is that right? Unmanifest, right?
Pradhan.
Pradhan is unmanifest. So, and when, I'm not very good in the creation, but when Krishna glances upon the Pradhan, correct me if I'm wrong, then the Mahatattva manifests. So Mahatattva contains all the ingredients of material creation, basically. So all the matter we are seeing, it's there in its original state in the Mahatattva, the all 16 elements of material creation. And then the living entities are put into the Mahatattva. And then all these universes come out. So the Mahatattva is basically, it is like a cloud in the sky where the material creation takes place, to put it in simple terms.
Okay.
clear or no?
It's mainly material, not spiritual.
Yeah, it's material. It's matter. Matter in its like kind of unmanifested. Or even the universes could be manifest within it, but still it is within the Mahatattva.
Second and third canto, Jesus.
Yeah. So the whole idea is to come out of the Mahatattva. It is place of darkness. And in the Mahatattva, therefore, in the universe, we need the sun. We need some kind of illumination. So it is by nature. It is a place where rebellious souls are put. So when so originally we are situated in the body of the Lord when the Lord is taking rest. So and then when there's another creation takes place, we are the living entities are thrown into the Mahatattva, and then we are the universes take shape, and then we actually assume certain kind of material bodies according to our previous karma. So the Mahatattva is a place in its more unmanifest stage. The 16 elements of ingredients are present, and then they are further developed, and the entire creation takes place within that, and there are countless universes in that. Any other question? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.